This episode of Cooking Issues is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, an employee-owned company that has been offering organic stone-ground products for decades.
Their flours and whole grains are the highest quality and are minimally processed at their stone mill in Oregon.
Visit bobsredmill.com to shop their huge range of products. Use the code COOKINGISSUES, that's one word, all caps, COOKINGISSUES, for 25% off your order. Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from like roughly 12 to roughly 12:45 from Roberta Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Not joined as usual by Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. She is even later than I am. She's on her way. She got pulled into a meeting. Now let me ask you something.
That sounds bogus.
Dave in the booth. Let me ask you something about a meeting. What's the one time during the whole week where you know you shouldn't be planning a meeting?
When you're doing your podcast?
That is correct.
Also, who gets pulled into a meeting? Don't you have to schedule a meeting?
Well, not in the old days. In the old days, the boss would just come by and be like, well, hey, come to my office. But now that everyone, like, commutes from home and has, like, all kind of, like, you know, responsibilities dribbling out of their ears and side jobs and crap, now everything has to be scheduled.
I drive Uber.
Yeah. Oh, speaking. For real?
Yeah, though, to keep my payments down lower at the bakery. Yeah, of course.
So I'm...
I gotta put my kids through school, so, you know, Uber at least, like, three nights a week.
The person,
you know, it's flexible.
Dave can barely talk.
Hold on, right, I gotta introduce you guys. First of all, I'm getting old. Maybe it's time.
I meant to say Lyft, not Uber.
We have Jim Leahy, founder, owner of the Sullivan Street Bakery, and
part-time Lyft driver.
And I would say... Would you say,
please,
like...
Please give me 5 stars.
How many different Sullivan-esque bakeries are there now in New York?
Oh, Jesus. I haven't really given it
any thought. How many direct offshoots of you are there?
Well, I mean, in terms of the other companies that I kind of influenced, if directly or indirectly.
All of them?
I don't know.
For those of you that don't know, and also, Peter Kim from the Museum of Food and Drink is here. Hello, Peter.
And no longer just punching bag Peter, but punching bag.
I want everyone to know out there that Peter Kim is now a father.
Yeah.
First time father.
That's a pretty cool rain stick, man.
Mm. Yeah. By the way, Jim, wow. you okay? How many kids you got, Jim?
Oh, I've got three.
Three. All right. So, you know, Peter, only one. Weren't warm, but whatever. Geez. Point is I feel I can no longer insult Peter in the same way, because then I'm insulting someone's dad.
Right.
And that's like... That's not cool.
Right.
Aww.
You know what I mean?
But you never seemed to mind your kids seeing you insult me. I remember one of the first times I hung out with Dax, he came over to me and said, Peter, why is my dad so mean to you? And, you know, I didn't know exactly what to say.
Why didn't you tell him the truth? I deserve it, Dax.
Dave's kind of a walking do as I say, not as I do
kind
of guy.
That's exactly right. He was just lambasting Stas for coming late.
That is a freaking lie. First of all, that is a lie. I take and I receive.
Ooh.
Unlike Trenton, the city of Trenton.
Oh. No, but I mean, in other words, I give people crap, but I also receive plenty of crap.
True.
Yeah. And I take it with... In general, with good humor. The only people I don't take crap in good humor from is people who won't receive it, who won't let me...
Like Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Bezos, turns out, like, his minions have been kind of a good sport about the whole thing. They haven't fixed our problems at Amazon, but they've been kind of a good sport. All right, listen. So what are we talking about today? So Jim has came out at the end of last year, a new cookbook, the follow-up to his, what is it, blockbuster success, the original one?
I guess.
Like blockbuster?
I would call it blockbuster, yeah.
So nuclear success.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was like for a bread book, the best selling bread book that in a long time.
Well, I don't know about that, but it did stay on the Amazon list for quite some time, up in the top part. But you know, it's I think more than the book itself. I think it's the method in the book has been imitated, I think, by no less than 12 other authors. So I've published the first book, and then there were other books that came out, trying to popularize the same method.
Yeah. Well, for those of you that don't know, Jim and I share an editor. We had the same editor.
Yeah, and in typical American fashion, all claimed that they kind of like were like it was their idea.
Well, no, but so yeah. Well, no, but like so our editor,
the no touch method.
Our editor Maria Guarnaschelli, who has since retired, so I didn't get to finish my second book with her. Anyway, she came up right.
Where was the soundtrack for the applause when you said that?
He doesn't know her. That's okay, why. Okay. So like, there you go. So the anyway, so she.
I'm sure she's lovely.
So. Family show, remember Family Show, everyone. So she she came up, I'm just reminding Jim Leahy, who, you know, we have similar foul mouths. It's just he's not used to being on the radio show, and so that's all. I was mentioning in advance.
I've toned down my use of foul language.
Why?
I don't know. I just
because Peter Kim has a kid now.
That's right.
Maybe.
That's why.
Maybe. Peter Kim, also a foul-mouthed individual. Peter Kim, a habitual line stepper. So if you take it right, if you take like a conversation right up to the edge of propriety, he'll just step right over that line.
Oh, is the pot calling the kettle black.
I used to be known for that.
Yeah, no, I'm the line rider, Dave.
No, man, you cannonball across that line.
I do it's not.
Like, I do a tiptoe. I do the toe across the
no,
line.
No, 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 no. Yeah, I jump.
I'm a line stepper. You are
broad
a line.
Shouldering across
I
it.
Jump over all the dash lines that people are afraid to go over, but then there's these hard lines that then Peter like goes right over the cliff on.
Yeah. Right.
You know what
the
I'm saying?
Hard red line.
Yeah, like I go over the yellow line, and he just goes onto the platform, to use a Subway reference.
I'm mixing so many metaphors right now.
Anyways, so... What Marina Guarnaschelli, the editor, like this, the whatever, what do you call the thing under the title? The tagline? What do you call it?
Subtitle?
The subtitle?
Yeah.
Was no need, no something, and then here's no work. She added that was her idea, right? Or was that yours? Yeah. No work. And she's like, that sold 8 jillion copies of that. People were like, I can make this kind of bread with no work? No work? I can make this bread? And they're like, so you sold 1 million copies of that.
Yeah. Well, I did get my first royalty check, which was nice.
Nice. After, you need to come up now with the no brains method. Someone who's really dumb can make it. What do you think?
I think there might even be a no need bread for dummies at this point.
Really? Yeah. So
wow.
So for those of you also that don't know, Sullivan Street Bakery, when did you open?
We're 24 years old this year.
What does that mean? 1994. So I moved into the city right then. That's right when I moved into the city. It was brand new. And my wife and I were in grad school. And the bread, cheers.
By the way, yeah, cheers.
Cheers, congratulations, Peter.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Bread in New York City, and I think I've said this on the air before, was freaking awful. Like, the bread in New York City was an embarrassment. In fact, like one of the reasons to travel to Europe and other places was that
simply
they had decent bread, and our bread was garbage. And by the way, the impression that all Europeans still to this day have of America is that our bread is bad. And not to, you know, pump you up any more than you need, Jim, but like when I first went to Sullivan Street, I was like, holy Christ. I was like, you know, someone cares about their bread. They're focused on a specific style. They care about it. I remember you used to, at the front counter, you had all those pizzas, like Bianca and everything.
I had to thank all the staff from stopping me from putting in an ATM machine and some soft serve ice cream service.
At the time?
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to take it in all these, like, you know, typical directions.
Oh, the bread.
Oh, the typical bread and soft serve mix.
The Boar's Head display, you know, that.
Everyone likes a Boar's Head display.
But thankfully, all my employees were, like, rallied against me, saying, no, you have to keep it really traditional.
Right. Anyway, and so, also at the time, he had these things that were, you know, called pizza, like Bianca. Did you do the potato one as well? You did the potato one, right?
We did, like, the typical pizza that you would get from a bakery.
Right. But Americans pizza?
The only difference is in Italy, where socially the bakery represents this, it's like this daily necessity, and also it represents a kind of like thrift, like the cheapness of bread in Italy really matters. It resonates with people. They feel the bread should be inexpensive, but there's this deep tradition and culture of methods and techniques and forms and all this other stuff. But in Italy, the bakers would use to make like a potato pizza the crappiest oils and potatoes, and they don't necessarily like cherish back then.
Right.
But now, if you go to Italy, you see that, you know, a lot of these forms that were maybe not front and center, but popular, have become even more front and center. You know.
You put the song Cherish in my head now.
Yeah, so James actually inspired a whole new kind of pizza in Italy, too, on top of everything else in New York. Wow.
What do you mean?
Peter's just being a jag. No, I'm not trying to imply that.
I'm just playing.
But, you know, you can see there are certain forms that have been constant.
Absolutely.
I'm not doing anything new. I'm just doing like my rendition, my version of something that I ate in Europe, basically, when I was a wee one.
How do you feel about all the Maison Kaisers that have cropped up everywhere around New York City? It's crazy.
I think it's amazing that that there's obviously a market for that, for this market.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very French approach. I think it's encouraging to see.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, from an operation standpoint, how they could make money, but if they do, then great.
Yeah.
I also think, just because I know how expensive some of the real estate is and also how much sales are required. However, most of the companies that come in this format, like, you see all this sort of this proliferation of like new coffee companies and Bluestone Lane and Joe and the Juice and all this other shit. Like,
hey, stuff, family show.
Wait. Yep. Being rolled out, and you realize it's just kind of like investment money and investment groups and people trying to sort of capture this sort of ever-changing, shifting market. It's almost like...
You really think it's that? I think it's people hate their lives and they like food.
No, we've become, we have expectations where we had less before. We have much more expectation now about how things should be. I mean, the diner is the old, you know, I mean... I mean, in the golden days of Yelp, you know, when Yelp mattered.
They had a golden day?
Well, in the beginning, when people would like, I remember when I opened Co. 10 years ago, which I recently closed, that was so important to see, to kind of follow your Yelp feed, if you will, and see what your ranking and your rating was. But then as time went on, it, like everything else in this world in which we're living, it became kind of corrupted by bots and
became corrupted.
Well, it was already. Well,
I just love the idea of this golden age
I'm gonna say golden age.
You're like, it's all the TripAdvisor now.
No one. We're still at the second inning in terms of these types of services. I mean, pretty soon Roberta's is going to be hiring wait staff from the basic Uber version of waiters that come in and basically, I'm here to work in your restaurant as your waiter.
They told you this? Or you're looking out here, but
eventually what's going to happen with technology is it's going to basically envelop us.
I don't know, man.
We're almost there. I mean, we've got like maybe a finger sticking out of the envelope.
I don't know, and we know
that there's sunlight because we can feel the warmth on our finger, or it's maybe a...
I mean, I'm as pessimistic.
Or someone's nose or something.
I'm as pessimistic as the next fellow, but
I'm
not
pessimistic.
People, I think there are people who will pay. Like, why? People, every once in a while, people try to bring back the automat, right? And honestly, if the food that I'm going to get is garbage, I'd prefer it to be a zero human being interaction. You know what I mean? But I think there's always going to be a market. And let's be honest, because we make very little in this country with our hands anymore, right? And, you know, to the extent that we do make things here, they're made by robots because that's the only way to do it, like, economically. To that extent, there's millions, hundreds of millions of people in service jobs that have no business being in service jobs because they don't care about other human beings or about service, right? And so you don't necessarily want to interact with those people because they don't want to interact with you. But I think at the high end, there's always going to be a market for a human interaction, one where you actually, like, and to use your word from earlier... cherish.
Well, the other thing, well, goes back to the mission of hospitality, which is one of hosting, one of welcoming, one of kind of curating for someone an experience. I mean, that it's a form of embrace, not just with words or, you know, plates or dishes or styles of cuisine. It's, I mean, that's ultimately what hospitality is about. I mean, for me, you know, I mean, the best designers, the best chefs, the best, you know, I mean, it maybe on a certain level for certain operators, it gets easier because they have access to so much resource. But it doesn't mean that they're going to succeed. It doesn't mean it's going to necessarily resonate. It's not like...
Right, but bad design...
But it's not like there's an algorithm now. I'm sure there already is a bot that studies, you know, the algorithm of what the next type of food concept or food trend is going to be based on, you know, an algorithm of...
No, yeah, there's big money in that.
Yeah, but I'm saying but at the end of the day, why the...
Fudge.
Why the farro salad would we want to worry about that right now?
Right.
And yeah. At the end of the day, it's like, you know, I wake up in the morning, I go to my little coffee bar, which happens to be downstairs, and
you're like, and I own it. Well, okay, but like, it helps. I say that the mediocre food, mediocre design, mediocre environs, top notch FOH service. Good experience.
Yeah. Well, but then again, you're also like, there's a whole army of people who know how to make coffee art and how to pull shots. I mean, I think there's even a employment service that kind of functions like Uber for coffee bars, where I own like 10 coffee bars and I'm missing a team member here and a team member there and a team member. And there's this sort of like circulation of voluntary baristas. Now,
according to David Schomer, that's your first mistake, owning 10. He's like, own two maybe.
Well, I mean, again, it's like, what is it? There is this sort of like desire or reach in our culture right now for grandness, for bigness. For
people, it turns out, like money.
Find the missile guidance arms contractor investor dude who needs to kind of launder money from Israel or whatever.
Man, you go so negative all the time.
No, or wherever, or from Germany.
No, they could be laundering from anywhere. I'm not saying Israel.
I'm very pro-Israel. I love Israel.
I really lost the thread here.
But they I know.
You want to take a call?
Yeah, caller, you're on the air.
Germany, Switzerland.
Hey, Dave. How are you doing?
All right, what's up?
Hey, I've got a rack of beef spare ribs cut from like the rib primal. And I was wondering if you had any advice on low temp or other unique ways of cooking this thing. I know there's not a ton of meat on there, but just curious to hear your thoughts.
So you cut the ribs off of the ribeye. Did you cut the whole bone off so you have the whole thing, or did you cut them short and left the bone on the ribeye?
No, I got the whole thing. I didn't do it, but it's like the big long rib rack with all the meat in between them.
Yeah. What grade level is the meat? Do you know?
Probably choice.
Choice. That's a really, I kind of like that word choice as a word.
Choice.
I actually like that word better than prime. I don't like that. Choice.
Amazon choice.
Yeah, choice. Anyway, so back to your problem. What I would do is, look, the honest fact is what access do you have to the out of doors?
I can get to like a Weber where I could smoke them or something like that.
All right, here's what I would do. I would just, if you have a bag, typically what I do is I low temp everything. I would, if it's tender enough as is, which it sounds like it is, I'd throw it in a bag with some olive oil. If you want to put some spices in it, whatever, you can salt it or not. I'd add pepper at the get-go. It depends on how long you're going to let it go. Then I would cook it at, I'm looking at my hands at the size. I would cook it at 55 degrees Celsius for in the area of an hour and 20, because you're not trying to tenderize it that much. You just want to guarantee that it's that whole level. Then I would let it cool down. You can let it sit out, whatever, because you're going to grill the hell out of it later. Then fire up your grill hot. I'm a huge fan. Everyone's all about control. I detest control in all things. I like temperature control on temperature controller when you're going low. But when you're going high, go high. Just go high.
Dave is a surfer.
It's like, go high. Always go high.
He's a flame surfer.
It is true. So, like, the way that I've been cooking in advance for the book that I have coming out that I'm working on.
With the butane bottle squeezing.
So literally what I do is, because I have a lot of extra wood, so I just try to make these maximum size fires to imitate almost in a horizontal fashion the flame intensity you get out of a tandoor. Right. Mm. And I create what amounts to a funeral pyre inside of my relatively large grill, because I have a cowboy, you know, grill. And I have infinite wood at the house. So I make these big fires.
I bet you do.
Infinite wood. Oh, Jesus, Dave, you had to go there, man. I would go high heat on it. And then I would just put them off and on. I would put it on for, depends on how high your flame is, between 45 seconds and 2 minutes. Pull it off for about 3 minutes. Back on, bop, 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 until you get the crust that you want. And that way, you can shift everything off and on your grill until everything is done. So I tend to be nowadays instead of trying to regulate the heat, I just regulate the amount of time that it's on the heat. Very rare that you don't want a nice crust on the outside of your food. And just by taking it off and on, you will lower the average heat input into the middle of the meat, so you're not going to overcook it. And you, every time you apply it to the high temperature for even short periods of time, you will make a better and better crust on the outside. So that's typically what I do. So for something like you have, at the level of heat I use, it's probably two times on at a minute aside. And that's going to be like real nice and charry on the outside. But again, like for me, that's like putting it inside of a kiln, basically. If you have a less intense flame, you might want to do it three times. But just if you're going to do it a lot of times, make sure to rest it in between. This is how, in a tandoor, you can have a juicy... Well, they also marinate and beat the crap out of the meat. But this is how you can have, not overcooked viciously, but have a nice outside. It's by off on, off on, off on. And that's kind of what I would do. But I would always ensure yourself with the low temp ahead of time. This way, there's no such thing as under. Your only mistake is to go over. And it's not that much extra time because, honestly, unless you're some sort of freak show, you're probably prepping at some point during the day. So throwing it in the bag
Or you could even prepare the day before.
Yeah, it's not going to hurt you. It's not going to hurt you. That's what I would do. And then also...
It gives you more time to send out handwritten invitations to your friends.
Yeah, the good news there is if you need to make some chicken for somebody else, also you don't even need to low temp the chicken because it's so thin. You don't need to low temp the chicken. Buy thighs, right? Buy chicken thighs. Right. Pound the chicken thighs out, relatively thin.
Bones and all?
I always remove the bones and the little thing of cartilage. So if you buy boned, if you buy boned chicken thighs, please remove that one nasty vein that they always leave in. And please remove that little piece of cartilage on the bone that for some reason that a-hole can never clip off for you. So remove that little cartilage knuckle because it's unpleasant.
Are you calling my friends a-holes?
I am.
You're mean.
Salt it, but don't do anything else. Salt it, pound it thin between two pieces of cellophane. Then I do a classic yogurt, lemon juice, pepper, garlic, and green herb of your choice, and maybe a spice of your choice, and a little bit of sugar. Not to make it sweet, a little bit of sugar. That's kind of the marinade that I use, and some oil. I add extra oil. And then I put that in a Zippy, or if you have a vacuum, I vacuum that with the chicken for a couple of hours. That'll tenderize it. The acid in the yogurt and the lemon juice will tenderize it.
I'm a firm believer in if you're going to marinate chicken, that it be brief.
Yeah, not that long.
Not that long. But, otherwise, the texture of the meat becomes like, fucking nasty.
Hey, family
sorry.
Show.
Sorry.
I warned you twice.
I hate that.
So
you ever go to those restaurants where they over marinate the meat? It's almost like
right, but
leather.
Okay, but remember though, you're over marinating like thick cuts of meat is like hyper problematic. If you pound it thin and you're gonna do the next thing I tell you, then it's not quite as bad. Then grill at infinity, right? Like just like like real flat, off on, off on, off on. Here's the other thing. I don't baste with oil in between because I'm a lazy weasel, so I spray Pam on it in between. So, like, I'll pull it off the fire, spray Pam on it, throw it back on.
You fox.
I'm telling you, man. When you get old, you get lazy. So it's like I was saying before, like, now that I'm 40, whatever, what am I, 47? I realized I need to buy gears for my bicycle. Like, I've been like, I don't need gears on my bike. I don't need a freewheel. I'm not a lazy man. But, going over the bridge today, I'm like, you know what? Maybe I could use a gear on my bike. Maybe I could use,
If you can always use a gear.
You did come in pretty out of breath.
I live in Portland, and people here, they go crazy over their fixies. And I think, honestly, people who eschew bike gears, they're just dumb. They're just dumb.
Wow. I like that strong statement.
Yep. Hot take.
But here's the thing. New York City, I'll tell you why I have a fixed gear bike. New York City is, by and large, flat. We have one decent hill in the 90s somewhere up by Kitchen Arts and Letters, the bookstore. We have a couple of bridges that have a kind of a decent incline. But otherwise, we're pretty flat. And the problem with New York is that my bike is stored in my closet. And so my derailleur kept on getting whacked out of adjustment constantly. And so, because like to ride in New York, I don't know what it's like in Portland, but to ride in New York, if you're going to actually lock your bike outside, this is way before City Bike, the chain was heavier than my bicycle. And it took like 10 minutes to properly lock it and unlock it. And you would enfilthen yourself every time with the chain. So I'm a huge fan, Peter Kim is as well, of bringing your bike inside with you, which means for me, a folder, right? Yeah. But the derailleurs kept on getting annihilated, and I was throwing chains constantly on the street. Like, I'd be going down the street, you stand on the pedal to get going off of a light, you throw the chain. The fifth time that happened, I'm like, no. And so the question was, am I going to go to a single speed freewheel? No cursing. I was going to go to single speed freewheel, or am I going to try the fixie? And I was like, you know what? I'll try it. What the heck? And then, like, I just haven't changed it since. It's been, like, you know, 10, 12 years or something like that. But I think at my time in life, I'm old enough that there is, like, it is, as you say, stupid to not have some gears on that thing. What do you think of the Archie Sturmer, hub gear shift system? I've never used one. They're not really very efficient, though, right?
I don't know a thing about that. I just know it sounds like you got a good reason. Here in Portland, we've got hills, and honestly, people who are struggling up those hills, sweating beads.
Yeah, no, there's no point in that. Yeah.
Like, hey,
yeah. Hey, do you guys have bike thieves there?
Oh, yeah, it's terrible. Probably not as bad as New York. But
bike thieves, people that steal people's transports, you know, but like, you don't know. Like, first of all, you don't know what that bike means to somebody.
I can think of one thing worse.
What?
People who steal your musical instrument.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yes, that's horrible.
That's vicious. Yeah. You know, there was a rash of like double bass thefts recently.
Yeah. I heard.
Yeah. Yeah. No, if you steal somebody's livelihood or somebody's form of artistic expression, like, that's when I wish there was a hell for you to go to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. Did I answer your question about the ribs?
But if there's a hell below, we're all going to go.
Yeah, 55, throw them on a hot grill, on off.
Make sure they cool down. Let them come down to room temp. Don't put them at 55 on the grill or you'll be ruining Christmas. No, you don't celebrate Christmas, in which case you'll be ruining the holiday of your choice.
Happy Christmas.
Yeah, but tweet us back. Let us know how it worked out.
Okay. Not cool.
All right. I got let me answer one of these questions so I can actually say I answered a question that was typed into us.
Answer a question, then we'll take a break.
All right. This is from Chef Dante Martinez in Seattle. So this is a West Coast program apparently today. I'm a chef in Seattle, and I have a very small kitchen. And the Twitter, if you want to look at the kitchen, is at the cottage Bothell. Bothell or Botel? TH, but Bothell or Botel?
Not brothel.
Yeah, I think it's a typo. It was supposed to be brothel.
You guys are the worst. What the heck is it with you people? Always in the gutter. Chef has no gas. I use portable induction, sous vide, or as my relatives say, sous vide. And an oven. One of my hit menu items is my sous vide jerk chicken. Jerk! People, whenever I see the word jerk, I have to say jerk that way.
Why?
Because Dax also does it. Jerk! Anyway, so he calls me that sometimes. He's like, Dad, don't be a jerk! You don't think the word jerk is really cool, the way the K hits? Yeah, the J and the K?
How old is Dax?
He's 13.
Uh-huh.
And same mental age as me.
Dad, you're a jerk! Jerk! Yeah. Jerk!
But although Booker calls me a jerk and honest more than Dax does. Like, when he means it more than Dax does.
How old is Booker?
16.
Okay.
Yeah. He also calls me an idiot on a constant
basis. Yeah, that's normal, though.
Fairly regular basis.
You remind him that's a normal thing?
No.
You should actually remind him that if he doesn't, then there's something seriously wrong with the universe. It is completely the way it's supposed to be, just as you probably said the same things, or at least thought the same things, but weren't able to say them because it was a different time.
Yeah, you weren't allowed to say that crap.
Yeah.
You think kids should say that now, though?
What?
You think kids should be allowed to say that now?
It's not a matter of whether they should. It's acknowledging the fact that they do.
Big difference here between Asian families and non-Asian families too.
Culture.
I never talked back to my parents ever.
I would get smacked.
Yeah, I didn't either.
And then I'd be shocked when my friends would, call their parents stupid or whatever. Like, just out of question.
Good times. Okay, so back to the question. All right. So people rave about Chef Martinez's jerk chicken, and it is good, but I want to take it to the next level. I would love to smoke the chicken with pimento wood. But pimento is allspice tree, right? So I've never seen the wood, right? Are you a fan of allspice, people? You like allspice?
Yeah, I like
people?
Allspice.
Uh-huh. Some spice? Allspice.
I like allspice.
Yeah?
Yeah, Jamaican pepper.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
It's also known as Jamaican pepper.
You got your allspice, your pimento. There's pimento dram, the liqueur. I like allspice. Anyway, I've never used the wood. So anyway, I would like to smoke with pimento wood, but it's just too dang expensive, too important to Seattle. My question is there a way to get the essence of the wood, that particular wood, into the jerk marinade? If I were to buy some wood, have it imported, could I capture the essence of the smoked wood into an oil or liquid? How would you solve this problem? Dante Martinez. Okay, here's the thing. I looked it up, and dang, that stuff is expensive. Real expensive. There is a Bradley. First of all, you have a couple choices here. You can par smoke stuff on the wood. For instance, you can do liquids. Liquids that are a little bit tackier tend to take up smoke better, so people will smoke, like, for instance, barbecue sauces and things like that. I looked up online, a lot of people are smoking like onions. So if you have a lot of onions in a sauce, like barbecue sauce, for instance, they'll cut up a bunch of those, smoke them, and then blend that into their sauce to get a smokier flavor. If I was going to do it, I would probably do this sauce. I don't think you're going to find a liquid smoke. Maybe you will. I was not able to. That is specifically pimento wood, right? I also looked up, and it is not that expensive to buy. There's two things I saw. Bradley Smoker, which is, the Bradley Smoker makes these pellets, these pellets. They have one called Caribbean Wood, but I think they're liars. I think what they do is they put allspice, the spice, into mesquite chips. And I don't know whether allspice, the spice, and pimento wood, the wood, have similar smoke profiles. So I would test it, but since you probably know what you're talking about, since you've used it in the real life, your mileage may vary. But there is someone who sells pellets of pure, I think pure, it said, pimento wood, and it is quite pricey. It is was $60 or $70 for 20 pounds. It was like $3 a pound or something like this. But you're burning about, in a pellet smoker, you're burning about a pound to a pound and a half an hour. And you're not going to smoke your sauce. If you have it in lots of trays, and so you have tray in a smoker, you're not burning that much. Let's say you smoked your sauce for 3 hours, your marinade for 3 hours. I think you could get a good amount of flavor into that. Or if you're doing the onions, you could do even less, probably like 45 minutes, and you can get a good amount of flavor. And it's costing you between $3 and $6 an hour. So the question is, how much sauce can you load in to your box? And then you just factor out your cost that way. But I think that's probably the way I would do it. But I don't know that, I don't know that you're going to find any commercially available. I mean, if you went to a flavor house and you're like, I'm making a jerk saying fake this smell, they would do it, How accurately they would fake it, I don't know. But I think you could probably do it for fairly economical price the real way, this way. That's what I would do. Because those smokers aren't that expensive. And you can jerry-rig one if you can't buy one. What do you think? Yes? No?
Yeah. All right. It makes plausible. Yeah.
All right. We'll take a break. Come back with more cooking issues. This episode of Cooking Issues is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, an employee-owned company that has been offering organic stone-ground products for decades.
Dave, we have a question from a listener about Bob's Paleo Pancake Mix. Michaela wants to know if she has to make pancakes or if there are other creative ways to use it. The ingredients are almond flour, arrowroot starch, organic coconut flour, organic coconut sugar, sea salt, cream of tartar, and baking soda.
No, so this is basically this is an ingredient mix that you could use similar to Bisquick, so anything you would use Bisquick for, but you want kind of a gluten-free slash farmed grain-free kind of a recipe, you could substitute it out for. I mean, I don't know how many cave people were making pancakes. It seems like not kind of a cave person thing to do. But yeah, any one of those, it's basically a Bisquick sub.
If you want to experiment with paleo pancake mix, go to bobsredmill.com and use the code COOKINGISSUES. That's one word, all caps, COOKINGISSUES, for 25% off your order.
Well, the jerk store called. They're running out of you.
Hey! Nice. All right, so So I got a couple things I got to get to real quick before we do anything else. Do we have any callers?
Not currently.
All right, okay, so tell me about the what's new about the new book? What's different about this book?
It's kind of a guide to making sourdough at home. It covers a lot of the breads that we make at Sullivan Street Bakery, plus some items that we used to make once upon a time, plus some things that we don't, just kind of for fun. It covers a lot of different techniques and methods for making and putting together dough, both no knead and kneading. Sourdough used extensively through the book, some fermentation of vegetables, which is something I enjoy doing and something we incorporate at the cafe. And it's just a lot of fun.
True or false? The average person who has sourdough at home, the starter is much like I was at the beginning of the show, spent and nasty, right? Mm-hmm. It's just been sitting too long. It's out of breath. It's like, you know,
what happens to a sourdough is that the microbes go into, depending on the state of the starter, whether it's a liquid starter or a more of a solid starter. But basically what happens when the dough reaches a certain level of acidity, like below 4.2, all of the, you could say the flora, the microbes that would be useful for making bread form cysts, like shells. And those shells protect the organism. And the organism basically stays the yeast, and in some cases bacteria. Certain classes of bacteria basically stay suspended until the conditions change in the substrate.
Right, but their relative balance also gets
stronger. Yeah, so I mean, you could have that like globule of, if it's real sourdough starter that's been in your fridge for like, 9 months or something, you could theoretically cut off or scrape off all the mold and just take like a hunk of it, and it should, under the right conditions.
Whoa. For most people at home, you're a fan of the real solid starter.
I think if you use a solid starter over time, that it influences the flavor profile of the final loaf of bread.
Negatively or positively, or just affects? It's
differently. I think positively. I think I prefer using and also just for management.
Right. The average person at home wants something that they can use between twice and like 0.25 times a month, and it's going to be consistent, and they can bring back to life within one day.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. So you just have to, like everything else in life that's worthwhile, practice. And also in my book, we give you lots of different tips on things to be aware of.
But you think for that baking schedule, a more solid starter is the best way?
Oh,
to go.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because things always happen slower in that?
I took also, you can dehydrate a sourdough starter very easily. Letting it putrefy, literally acidify, putrefy basically is the word, and drop to an acidity of like 3.8 or 4.2 or lower, and then you can create a slurry, and if you have a dehydrator at home, you could put a smear of the slurry of the liquid on a parchment paper and just let it dehydrate.
Only a New Yorker thinks the word smear is even remotely appetizing.
I know. Yes. Well, then it's like more like you think of bagel or something like that.
Yeah. Putrefies the word that I use to describe.
Bum, bum.
Yeah.
All right. Bum, bum.
So you spread it out, you dehydrate. Dehydrate what, like lowest setting?
Yeah, Yeah. Or like, you know, in an oven with the like the utility light on overnight or something like that. Just something to dry it out. You could even just leave it on a. I mean, you could leave it on a, you know, just to dry out on your counter, but then there is always that risk of spoilage organisms alighting on it. Hey, spoilage organisms.
My favorite kind of organism. So, and then how long does that take to bring back to life?
If it's a, I mean, I kept a starter in my freezer for, after it had dried, like 4 years.
But
like,
how long does it take to make a blood?
Like, oh, oh yeah, yeah, no, it, within 24 hours, it was already active. Right. Just
so you could bake within 24. How yeah, many, so what how I, many
I would,
doubles
I would take
do?
The dry starter. Uh-huh. I would add it. I would kind of bring it back to life in a more a wetter environment.
Like 1-to-1 or wetter?
Yeah, 1-to-1. Like batter. Batter consistency. So I dilute it in water, add some flour, put it into a like a clean a very clean mason jar with a lid screwed tight. And the reason why I say put the lid on tight is because then you can see if the liquid is beginning to gas, because the lid will pop a little bit, and that's always a good sign. And you've got to remember that yeasts that make our beer and our wine taste good and our bread taste good are anaerobes. They're just as happy without oxygen as they are with, you know.
For folks at home, you rock an AP in your starter or what?
A what?
You use an AP?
An AP?
AP flour.
Oh, no, I only use, at the bakery, we only use winter wheat.
Yeah, for home people.
Okay, we use a flour that...
I only use winter wheat.
Winter wheat. Har, 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 har. We use the winter wheat because it's less likely to have glyphosate residues on it. I also just like the, typically the flavor, subtle, nuanced flavor of winter wheats. You know, wheat in and of itself does not have pronounced flavor profiles. It really is. It's all very, very subtle. And that is when it's just as raw flour. It's only when it's fermented that you can actually coax out some other flavor profiles.
Same like grapes.
Yeah, just like grapes. It's like anything that ferments, you know what I mean? It's all about the choice of the primary materials are the most important thing.
So, Peter Kim, I don't know if you know this. Jim Leahy hates Martin's potato rolls.
What?
No, I don't.
You
I
last show.
That. No.
You were like, I was like, what bread that everyone loves do you think is garbage? And you said Martin's potato rolls.
Well, I mean, right. But I'm saying it's. No, I mean, I'm sorry, in defense of Martin's potato rolls. I'm getting.
We've got confirmation. Your kind ain't welcome here, Jim.
We've got confirmation in the booth here that you did say that.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know, Jim.
Because right, well, Dave was like, I remember that. That was true. He said that.
So.
Well,
so
I mean, they're
put,
not.
What
I mean,
your burgers
it's not.
On,
it's.
Then?
It's. I don't want to be a bread fascist. It's not. Martin's. Is
this
not,
is a post-Trump thing with you. You all of a sudden, like, you don't want to be a bread fascist. Like all of a sudden.
You just well, don't no, like squishy I'm
trying,
bread.
Yes, I'm trying to. Avoid embracing fascistic ideas in the age of Trump, which I don't think is a bad thing. And by the way, Michelle Wolf was fucking genius.
Hey,
here,
hey,
here.
Hey,
I'm
sorry. Hey, family show with the cursing.
It's you can't stop it.
Michelle Wolf for president.
Well, first of all, absolutely. Apolitical show, Dave in the booth. Apolitical show.
That's all I got to say.
I will say that she did not insult Sarah Huckabee Sanders' appearance. People who say that she insulted her appearance are mistaken. Yeah.
They are lying just like she does on a daily basis.
No, what they're admitting.
By what they are admitting.
This show is about cooking. I know, but what they're admitting, this is also about life, brother. What they're admitting by attacking the comedian is what they really think themselves. So it's almost like the people who are defending her are insulting her.
Yes, I get what you're saying. Yeah. I get what you're saying.
They're not listening to the actual text. Anyway, talk about
the other thing is I don't understand why people want to like expose themselves. Comedians expose themselves to being roasted because they're used to it. They give, they take. But like to like hire someone whose job it is to skewer you and then be upset when you get skewered seems.
Well, but the problem is the person who was meant to be skewered refused to show up. And this is the
All right, wait. What were we talking? We were talking about bread, I thought. Martin's
Let's
potato rolls.
Do the politics.
First, here's something. Let me tell you something that's true. People the airport phenomenon of people trying to use crusty bread that they then refrigerate and make a sandwich out of and it's overly dry, all those people should be thrown into a wood chipper.
Well, I love those kinds of sandwiches, as you know, Dave.
Peter Kim has eaten moldy egg salad out of a gas station sandwiches, which is, I've seen him do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Cast really? Iron. Because he lived in...
Egg salad sandwiches?
Yeah, it's the best kind. You don't really get the flavor of the egg until it's coaxed out by the
mold. But what type of molds?
He didn't even test it, man. He rocks it wild.
The best way to know is just...
He's bareback in his mold there.
Put it in the laboratory of the mouth.
But my point being that...
The laboratory of the mouth.
My point being that I think for a lot, especially of an American-style sandwiches, the way that they're built is a soft with a roll with not a lot of crust structure is helpful sometimes.
Yeah, I agree.
But you're like, I just don't like those things.
No, I wasn't. I think you're misinterpreting. What I was trying to express was that I think I had said it. Good bread is back. Bad bread is back. Meaning that, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, a restaurateur or a chef wouldn't think about using a Martin's roll. Whereas now it's okay because it's become sort of like this very popularized.
But you're saying it's bad
low
bread.
Low country. No, it's not. It's just a type of bread. Well, it's an enriched bread. It has this...
You know what the issue
is? You're a freaking MOFAD guy. It has a whole historical precedent behind it. It's not in a vacuum.
The issue bread. Is the
well,
issue
the thing,
with
there's
Martin's,
more opportunity now to use it in a contextualized way, right?
Yeah.
The real issue with Martin's is that it's got a very narrow toast window, so it burns very quickly. You have to be careful with Martin's potato rolls because it goes from... lightly toasted to burnt very, very quickly.
It's got plastic inside. and that's why it burns so quickly. Have you ever lit a Martin's roll on fire? It actually...
I mean, not on purpose.
It actually begins to drip. Like
you're just making stuff up. You're making things up.
Like, do you ever take a CD?
Fake news.
Do you ever take a CD and you light it on fire?
Oh, boy. Here we go.
And then, like, the same thing.
Okay, this demands empirical proof.
This is what we in trade refer to as a lie.
This could be we can actually torch up some Martin's buns for fun.
Listen, do you know what?
It could be viral. We could even after they cool down, we could even have bread face roll her face in burnt bread.
Bread face was like that's one of my nicknames, bread face.
No, yeah, but the bread face. She's really famous.
Yeah.
Online. She's got millions of followers.
I don't know this. Does she have a face made of bread? Listen, I have
for you. She rolls her face in bread.
Oh, it doesn't make sense to me.
It's a fetish.
Okay.
It's a fetish. She's never rolled her face in
like
my bread.
Is that like the stinky feet animal smashing you fetish, which someone showed me?
You know, I have never seen that one.
And it's amazing.
I never
large,
want to see
large animals Dave, with smelly show. Feet. Stepping on people. It's a thing. But you know Josh Eden Shorty?
I love Josh Eden.
He's saying at the new bar, we're going to be ordering bread from you. Is that true?
Awesome. I guess that's true.
He doesn't know this, that I'm talking to you right now. Do you ever do any custom work for people if they ask for something specific?
If the volume is there, yes.
What if the volume is not there, but I ask pretty please?
I'm as a one-off, it might be more likely that I could go in and show you how to make something.
I just want... I can do it with your bread. I can do it to your bread, but I would love... like a Bianca style thing with caraway and salt on top.
Uh-huh. It's always possible.
Because I like a kumul.
That's the seeds are easy.
That's what I'm saying. Seeds and salt.
Seeds don't stress me out.
All right, we gotta think about wrapping this thing up.
Oh, so Peter.
That's the title of my next book, by the way.
Seeds and salt?
No, seeds don't stress me out.
Seeds don't stress me out?
Yeah.
All right, so Peter, from the Museum of Food and Drink, what other than being a dad, which is amazing, what have you come to pimp out on the museum?
I don't come here to just pimp out things, man.
No, whenever I ask you to come on just to show up, you're like, I'm too busy. So there's got to be something you're pimping out for the museum.
Well, I'm always pimping stuff, but no, I mean, we've got new exhibits up. We've got the
talk about the chickens baby.
Including your boy, I Am Samani.
Are you Samani?
Yeah, no, I am Samani, not you. So we've got...
Have you seen this all black chicken?
Yeah.
All black chicken, bones black, meat black, feathers black, eyes black, all black. All black everything.
Even the whites of his eyes are black.
All black everything.
Yes, everything. So we've got a bunch of chickens.
Ancient breed.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. We have a giant like leghorn.
Gigantic leghorn.
And
gigantic
so like every leghorn. Time I Foghorn. Pass it, I'm like, I say boy. I'll say it.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We've got we have the Model T of refrigeration, the first domestically available electric refrigerator.
Very first one. And in fact, low serial number and like unrefinished, like pristine.
That was
from
a
the thing.
Curatorial decision that we decided not refinish.
It's not because we didn't have the money to refinish it, people.
No, no, it was a curatorial decision.
By the way, this fridge changed. This fridge changed everything. So it turns out General Electric Corporation is like, we make electricity. How are we going to sell this crap? And they're like, I know. We'll put a refrigerator in people's house, and then they're going to use electricity all the time.
Yeah,
and that's what they did.
Yeah.
So that's why General Electric got into the refrigerator business, because they were selling electricity.
So we got all that. We've got a lot of programs we just launched. We have a honey tasting this Thursday. We're doing pairings with cheese and other stuff. Next week, we have something with your boy, Don Lee, looking at agave spirits.
Oh, yeah.
And,
just looking at them, no tasting.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And,
wait, then do we still have tickets available for the benefit?
Yeah, yeah. The gala is coming up on May 17, celebrating biodiversity or honoring Dave Chang.
And I think new bar, Existing Conditions, is making cocktails
that's
for
right.
it. So come out and
that's
see
right.
the Existing Conditions team.
And then we have the after party after that with Jarobi of A Tribe Called Quest.
Nice. So, do you know Josh, our chef, Josh Eden, friends with A Tribe Called Quest.
Nice. Yeah.
By the way,
this is Jarobi from A Tribe Called Quest.
There you are.
There you go.
Hello. Hey, Jarobi. Hey. What's up, man? How you doing?
So I'm allowed to talk about the new bar. It's called Existing Conditions. We're opening in May on West 8th Street. So look for us. You know, we'll be there.
And I'm opening up my bakery, reopening my retail shop on 47th Street this Thursday.
Do you know what that neighborhood used to be such a crap hole back in the day when you first moved the production up there? It was such a crap hole. This is beautiful bread you bought. How long is that bread?
It's really long.
And you can get this.
This is really beautiful.
Peter, you got to Instagram this out.
All right.
Bianca.
Lady in the Trap moment. Oh my God.
No
lady
mouth
in the
noises.
Trap moment. Here we go. All right. Jim, look this way. Jim, there we go.
For the listeners in Radio Land, Dave and Jim are eating a baguette from opposite ends.
A baguette!
Yes. It's not
a baguette.
It's not a baguette.
Actually, yeah, I wasn't even looking when I said that.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, what the hell is that?
Well, it's not open.
It's like the 6 foot sub of Bianca's.
Yeah.
Whoa. Is it actually 6 foot long?
Mm hmm. That's awesome. Nice.
I'm covered in
milk. Can I give this to the museum staff?
Yeah, of course.
Nice. Rock
just
that.
Watch the crumbs in my studio, okay?
Oh, no, me, watch the crumbs in my studio. You guys have people coming here smoking the weed all the time, and you're worried about a little bread?
We're not like that anymore.
Oh, right. Come on.
Yeah, please.
So, by the way, these chickens are cool. Come on, see it. Fun fact on chickens.
Crumbs, by the way, are illegal.
What?
If someone finds crumbs in your recording studio, you could theoretically be arrested for it. Whereas little bits of ganja are okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, just the leaves. The what's that stuff called? The
oh, don't act like you don't know.
Shake.
The trichromes.
Shake. So anyway,
Dave on drugs would be a scary thing.
Yeah, you know,
I've
told this. People think that I'm high on cocaine when I do this show.
No,
but I am not.
No, you're not. What's
the InfoWars guy?
InfoWars, what, Milo?
But Alex?
Alex Jones.
Alex, yeah, Dave on drugs is Alex Jones.
I only know Tom Jones, the singer. I would love to be like that.
What's New Pussycat?
Oh, whoa. Yeah, I love that. Anyway, so my point is...
Sleeping Analia?
What's that? I don't know that one.
Sleeping Analia.
Okay. Anyway, so fun fact about chickens, people, that you will learn when you come to the museum.
I'm an explorer.
Wow.
I'm a human.
Wow.
Scratches at his fingertips.
So,
excellent. Job.
Chickens domesticated, Peter, for what reason?
For entertainment.
For fighting.
That's
fighting.
Right.
Not for meat, not necessarily for eggs, for fighting.
That's right.
And it was the wild guinea fowl.
And they're pretty vicious when they fight.
Yeah, and we have some fighting chickens that are taxidermied. By the way,
they all died naturally.
Yeah, naturally because a knife went through their throats.
But in their prime, they were
the last thing we need is a PETA lawsuit. Yeah,
don't we all
die naturally?
Don't we all die naturally, people? Yeah. But the point is that they were domesticated for fighting. We have some fighting chickens there. We have lots of interesting breeds. Come see them. It's the only, I think, the only display of kind of cross-cultural, cross-time domesticated taxidermy that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many we got there right now?
Like 18, 19.
Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And we've rejiggered Chow, the exhibit. Yeah. So come see it. Come hang out. Come to the museum. Buy tickets to the gala. Go to mofad.org to purchase tickets, correct?
Yep.
Or do you have some sort of eventbrite.snot
no,
that crap?
Right. No. Mofad.org?
Mofad.org.
Sorry.
Yeah. All right. And thanks to Jim. Thanks to
F-bomb
Peter.
Jim.
F-bomb Jim.
Not
and
an
Peter Kim. Cooking issues.
Right. Far from F-bomb.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.